So, amassing a stupid amount of content.
Yes.
Is there such a thing?
Yeah.
A stupid amount of content?
I suppose. What quantity is a stupid? Is it stupefying? This is 10 stupefies?
Maybe. Let me pull up that Ryan Estrada tweet that reminded me. I was reminded of when you said that today. He says, okay, here we go. Ryan Estrada, take a drink, everybody. Every time I work on my new book, new ideas make it longer and more complex. It's like trying to swim to shore in an awesome riptide.
Wow.
That is it. That is it. That is making things. That sums it up.
Yeah, that's very super eloquent. I can't believe that all fit within one tweet, and it's awesome.
He did do 25 or 24 drafts of that before he got to that. Like, to be fair.
Are you serious?
No.
Okay. I'm like, wow. That's really carrying that to an extreme. So, all right. Stupid amounts of content. So what... why does this stick out in the front of your mind, Jersey?
Because you were reporting that you were working on a thing,
mm-hmm.
maybe for Lumitart, maybe for something else, where you made it more complex by building a stupid amount of content on the thing, and that until you looped back around and realized that your initial idea was actually pretty serviceable and it was much more elegant, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Did I sum it up?
Yeah, you totally summed it up. And I'm happy to share any amount of detail on this because it's actually a little bit self-serving and fun for everybody. Because
it's a teaser.
Exactly. It's totally a teaser. So, yeah. I was working on the new version of Underwater Tomato Ninja, which this audience, you know, you've heard me say before. But it's been a long, circuitous path to end up back where I started. And
all I know is Duke Nukem, Rob. Duke Nukem.
It is my Duke Nukem.
What was it called? It's like Duke Nukem Forever was the one that like took forever to come out.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, kind of cute. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was the IP was bought by Gearbox, and yeah. They finished it. They forced it out the door.
Yeah,
so good for them. So maybe they'll save me too.
And I am just prodding you gently from the side, but you haven't been working on it that long, dude. I mean, you test flew it a year ago.
Go ahead.
No, you test flew it a year ago at Kids Read Comics.
Mm-hmm. Twice.
Twice. Oh, that's right. You did. You did mm-hmm. Saturday and Sunday. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I mean, like as somebody who's been teaching for a good number of years now, it takes time to polish a lesson into concert pitch. And I hate saying that because then it makes like the kids you tried it out on like, hey, because they got the draft. But yeah, it's like my 6-week series that I do at the library, holy cow, it's nothing like it was years before. So this stuff goes through revision and, you know, testing and refinement and clarity. But I think the thing that's interesting to me is that in the process of making a thing, you do amass a stupid amount of content and you do layer on tons and tons of complexity without noticing it, right? You're just throwing one more sheet of paper on the
Well, pile. It feels like the right thing to do because for me, it's like I don't want to punish learning. So I'm like, oh, wow, I learned more and I would like to be more specific here. And I could see someone having this question and that question. And then it just kind of built up and it went from that elegant, well, fairly elegant, pretty well packaged idea in a form that I feel really confident that I can provide. It got silly. It became a stupid amount of content where I'm like, this is unwise. That's what I mean by like literally. This is like if someone came to me with this is like, hi, this is the project I'm working on, the volume, whatever. I'd be like, oh boy, you know, yeah. Good luck. And
okay. Question.
Yeah.
When did you notice it was a stupid amount of content? At what point did it become that? What did you realize immediately before looking at the pile of content and say, like, one second, this is great. The next second, this is stupid. What realization happened?
It's when I attempted to let's see, that was a buildup over time. So I started to try to reconceive, how am I trying to package this and how many things am I trying to accomplish with it? And I would slough that task off, and then I would keep amassing more content. And then I would revisit that other task, and then I'd slough it off again and keep amassing more content. And then I finally faced that task, and so, which was, okay, so who exactly is this for now? Because it seems to have wandered. Like, so I lost my sense of my own purpose, the goals I want to accomplish with sharing it, and also lost touch with who I'm actually trying to help with this. And then that's some pretty big red flags for me naturally. And then I actually tried that silly 25 title exercise, and that thing that we mentioned that part of the Upworthy presentation that we linked to in the prior Lean Into Art episode with Ryan Estrada.
Lean Into Art 84.
Yeah. And the exercise where you just write 25 titles, push yourself to do that. And I did, knowing that, like, when, by titling this, I'm inherently encapsulating my intent and who I'm trying to reach. And, like, good titles are a handy utility. And I took 25 swings at it and I went, oh, I can't believe what this is indicating to me. I'm back to where I started. And, like, that's actually not a bad form to now refine that a little bit. It's not just going to be just the new version of that workshop isn't just going to be a slightly dusted off thing, so it'll be a refined version, though, an iteration on what I had already last summer. And I think now I'm reminded that that's going to be very useful because of the tact that the whole workshop takes, which is you get to play with a working game to discover how to work with and make games. That's it.
But don't you think that getting lost in the woods like that is part of the process?
Yeah. And also that whole, my principle of, it's important to reward learning, or the inverse, it's important to not punish learning. Yeah, that's what feeds into it, where it's easy to, you can wander off if you just feed into that. If you don't have a constraint that's keeping you on track, because learning doesn't stop, right?
Right.
And it's one of those
things. Learning doesn't stop.
Yeah.
So we should have called it. Not Lean Into Art. Learning doesn't stop.
Time to
too late now.
No, it's not too late.
Dunk that one. No, that's true. Ryan Estrada taught us that we could go back and edit. It makes you wonder about the big question for me is whether or not we should have checkpoints in our creative process to check in on, like you do in like jobs with projects, right? We have checkpoints where we have meetings to talk about where things stand with everything and to know where everything's going. Or should we let ourselves get lost? Because sometimes that's where true inspiration lies, is when you wander down the rabbit hole, wondering upon wondering upon wondering until you land on this weird thing that you never would have thought of if you didn't go down that crazy path, right?
Yeah.
So I had a very similar experience where, okay, so this is where I can share some stuff. I'm working on, as we all know, the Max Zero RoboForce comic. His name was changed. It was recently made public that his name is now Max Zero instead of Max Steel because of complications with Mattel having a character named Max Steel with a different spelling. So I'm working on that. Pencils are done. I'm in the process of inking and coloring now. So it shouldn't be too much longer before some pages actually start dropping. And then I've got a graphic novel project, which I actually legally cannot talk about because there are contracts and things involved. And then there's like a little short piece I'm doing for a well-known magazine coming up later on this early next year. So I've got some projects going on, right? But here's the thing. Publishing world moves in weird ways where there's like there's periods of time where I'm not actually working on it, but I am working on it. I don't know if that makes any sense. Where it's like, I'm committed to doing it, but there's nothing for me to do until Tuesday, right?
Sure, yeah. Okay. So you're queued up and you're committed, I think is the perfect way to put it, where yeah.
I'm committed. This fall is going to be bonkers. It really is going to be bonkers. And Rob, you can attest to this. I've told you about these things. It's going to be bonkers. But there's like this spin-up cycle that I'm in the process of right now. And so I want to take advantage of the spin-up cycle to work on things that I wanted to have happen on the side, like my ebook for Lean Into Art. And then the other thing is anybody who's been following me, I've been doing these little test pieces on my Galaxy Note, trying to push the edges of what you can do as far as like full comic illustration. And I was going somewhere with this. I had a goal in mind of what I wanted to do. And one of these things was I wanted to do a short story entirely on the Galaxy Note. That would be my pitch. That'd be my angle. Look, it's a kid's comic drawn entirely on the Samsung Galaxy Note. You know, try to get a little bit of extra attention that way. And it'd just be something I do an hour a night before bed because I'm already drawing on the thing at night anyway. So I'm working out using this spin-up time for these new jobs to get some writing done. And I'm sitting in the car this afternoon waiting for my wife to get out of work, and I'm writing and writing. And I was thinking about those 25 titles, and I was thinking, I need to know the aboutness of this story. I've got all these notes. I've got a lot of complementary and ideas with synergy or symmetry or whatever kind of sin word you want to use that means that they have something to do with one another. But I don't know what the aboutness is yet. So let's try to tackle that today. I've got like lots and lots of notes, but I don't have anything concretized in what the aboutness is. And I like to discover the aboutness. I don't like to always just apply one on, but let's see if I can figure it out. And I start writing those out. And they all stunk. And you want to know why? Because I had this, I took these giant 30-gallon bags of garbage, which all have the potential to be something great. And I dumped them in the middle of the floor and said, figure out the aboutness out of this. And I didn't get through all 25 of my headlines. But why did I have all that garbage? Because as I got lost down that rabbit hole, I kept saying, yes, and, yes, and, yes, and, yes, and. And this could be in there. And this could be in there. And I think getting lost like that is part of the process, because then the next stage is once you catch that checkpoint of going like this, I don't know what this is, time to edit. Time to round back, figure out the aboutness, throw out whatever doesn't correspond to that aboutness, right?
Yeah. I mean, so what is your term for that? I think of that as I call it different things, but it's just essentially like the natural creative process or a creative flow where, you know, things have to get generated and amassed that you can then somehow associate or refine and or prune. And then at some point you have to put them through some practical filter to get them shared with the rest of the world, which could be whatever, right? You know, going through your art pipeline for how you want the book to look or whatever. Whatever it is, you have to like now get it captured in the final form and then share the dang final form. But like early on, it's totally what you describe, which projects that skip that generative phase are oftentimes, I feel like can get stuck because they've got nothing to draw from, right? They just kind of went forward too soon. So you're going forward when you've already amassed a bunch of stuff. And, okay. So it sounds like that was a stumbling block a little bit, but then what happened?
Well, it's a stumbling block only in the sense that I had my piles of garbage and I called it done. I said to myself, this pile of garbage is the writing. And then when I sat down to start thumbnailing what I had, I realized, wait a second, I don't really know what I'm doing here. When a simple question like, what kind of house does this character live in, comes up, I haven't sifted through the garbage enough yet. And that's when I thought, maybe I should have a real sense of what the aboutness of this story is. Let's try to figure that out so I can start to make some real informed decisions about simple things like what kind of trees are in this place, right? So it was a stumbling block only in the sense that I thought I was done, I wasn't done, and I just want to chart this emotional progress, at least for me. There's this moment of, oh, God, so much more to do on this thing, and I thought I had it. And like really being mad about it, like really, like, you know, like there's another me behind me kicking me in the butt as hard as he can. And I'm going, I'm sorry, as I'm kicking myself in the butt. But then stopping to remind myself that this is all part of the thing. And you've done this before. You'll get through this. The ideas will coalesce when you sift through the garbage and do a few checkpoints like the 25 headlines, asking yourself what the aboutness is, rounding back and editing, right? Mm-hmm. But what's interesting to me is that we have to go through this every time. We never get, at least in my experience, we never get to the point where we're like, aha, Rob, I did it. I'm a grown-up, and I just know what to do when somebody tells me to write a story. Ah, hello, would you like me to write a story? Yes. Give me a piece of paper. It'll take 5 seconds. Here, and here's your story. I did it.
Yeah, I mean, so that would mean... until I read the Percy Jackson books, I never really knew that much about the Greek mythology, right? Uh-huh. At least some of the more subtle characters like Procrustes, right? Mm. So yeah, I mean, a lot of times you can do that, but I would argue you might be engaged in a Procrustean solution, which Procrustes would in the Percy Jackson series, he was a bed salesman, right? And he had beds that were of various lengths and sizes, and like no matter what, he would make sure you fit that when he sold a bed.
Yeah.
And so I mean, some customers got stretched, some got chopped. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, and anyway, so yeah, that was one of the monsters they faced, and yeah, so. If you have a Procrustean solution, sure, you can make stuff fit, no problem, right?
Yeah.
Stretch or cut. Boom. but I don't think Procrustes gives a crap about having... So, for instance, I don't think he... Well, right, he doesn't care about his customers at all. So if you want, you know, to see your desired effect with your story come across, or what you tried to communicate... then that's pretty good incentive to try to not be so rushed, which then I think is what makes you vulnerable to what you just said, which is now you might run into situations where you get lost for a while and then something may pull you back. But then again, like constraints, that's where how do you feel about this? Because you spent a bunch of years doing a webcomic every week. Now, and you have tons of deadlines as a as an independent illustrator and whatnot.
Yeah.
What do you think of deadlines as one of the constraints that help you?
Totally. Totally. I think that's part of the reason I was so frustrated, because I thought I was poised to start working on that little sideline thing now, and maybe even gear up a little bit of a buffer. So when I dive headlong into these new projects in like a week, I'll be a little bit ahead of the game and I'll have some momentum going on that, you know? And then there was that like, oh no, it's going to be another couple weeks before I really got this thing licked. And I really wanted it. So then it becomes a decision, right? Do I progress with what I got now and hope that it comes together, or do I just keep buffing it a little bit longer? Given that it's something that I'm not going to make any money on, it's something I'm going to be doing just purely as an experiment for pleasure while I'm doing stuff that makes money, I thought that the right decision was like, give myself a little bit of time.
How'd you recover so fast though from that? Or wasn't it? Or was, I don't know, like what, because I felt a similar sense of loss, you know, juggling a few different projects myself recently with, because yes, there's also a game project I'm working on, which I do mention once in a while. And that has been going on since I think January. Still not ready to share a bunch of details on it, whatever. But it's coming along. And let's see. I have run into different milestones where, I mean, I had to swap out my entire technology stack that I was using, where it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, edit levels in this way, whatever. And I felt like I had I had arrived at a certain milestone. Like I'm getting pretty far along. Like I've proven the core technology and I'm able to, you know, test my content. Now my content looks pretty realistic. I was like, oh yeah, checking these things off the list. I'm getting close to now designing levels and stuff. And that was a pretty big bum out when I was like, well, okay, I ran into a critical bug for in this case with it's, it wasn't just like, in a way it unmasked what I had built up as like surprise piles of garbage, you know? And I don't know, that sucked.
How do you recover?
Dang it. How did I end up in this position?
Yeah. Well, you asked me a question. I just deflected it.
Yeah, you did. You did deflect it. So I'll see if I can concisely rise to the challenge.
Well,
I believe that because I don't have a hard date for this project, it made it easier to accept that, like, well, what I can do, I just have to look at, well, my list of accomplishments has changed. I need to reset this list back a bit. And now I need to go work on what's most important and fundamental that can move me forward. What can I do to get moving forward again on this? And then that's what I focused on.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
And I mean, it was the exact same thing as is my particular story was that, oh, I'm getting slapped back all of a sudden.
Oh, sorry.
No, it was probably just because you were leaning in intently as we're getting more and more into what we're talking about as we're watching the clock to find out when is the moment when we end, right? Yeah. Just for people who we don't do video on this one. For people who are listening, Rob and I are like giving each other like knowing looks as we do this thing, waiting for that moment as the clock approaches 20 when we're going to drop the, you know, drop the button. Happens every time. It's so great. That's what you call chemistry. No, but with the thing I was talking about, like there was no real deadline. There was my deadline, which I hate to breach, you know. You feel like a failure. We're not a failure, but you feel disappointed, right?
Yeah. Sense of loss. Yeah. Like I had a thing. Now the thing's gone. Dang.
Yeah. And there's all sorts of anxieties built up around this, but here's where I want to drive sort of spin around this thing. And I'm going to bring in Weird Al Yankovic. Cause I would submit that you have, I wouldn't call it a pure Taoist outlook, but it's heavily influenced by Taoism, right? And mono no aware, the beauty of impermanence, understanding that here today, gone tomorrow, and what a wonder that we get to experience it at all, right? Mm-hmm. Which gives you a sense of perspective when things start going bad. And Weird Al Yankovic has this wonderful song called Everything You Know Is Wrong. That's the name of the song. And it's off of, I think, Bad Hair Day. Have you ever heard this one?
No.
It's one of his silly originals. I love his original songs, by the way. But one of his sillier originals where... It's really just about, like, I was driving on the freeway in the fast lane, I got into an accident, then my hibachi dealer leaned over me, took off his prosthetic lips, and tells me everything you know is wrong. And the refrain, so the song itself is very silly, but I actually think that it has this weird combination of Dadaism and Zen Buddhism rolled into 3 minutes of audio, because the basic premise is that I was trying to do this normal thing, the world exploded in my face, and then all of a sudden the head of Colonel Sanders is screaming, everything you know is wrong, black is white, up is down, and short is long. As life is, yes. As whenever you think you're plodding along, like, this is going great, something like that happens, right? And he probably didn't mean that in the song. He probably just wanted to tell something funny about candy bars and Colonel Sanders and dying and going to heaven. But what I got out of it was that this is a very... this is a good reminder. And I play that song probably 2-3 times a week to remind myself when this stuff happens. You know, this is a delight. I get to re-examine this thing over and over and over again. And at the very least, it's never going to be boring.